All right, we're back here on ESPN Mississippi 95.1, the Fan on Game Day. Jimmy over there pushing all the right buttons, and certainly appreciate you guys taking time to tune in today. We're going around the SEC and talk with several people outside the local area. Go over to LaGrange, Georgia now. Boji Wood joins us, he does every Monday, kind of give us a little insight. And several questions, Boji, I want to ask. One, certainly, we can't go very far into this program today without talking about LSU and Texas A&M. I don't know your thoughts about that, but I watched every snap, watched some of the replay, and got up yesterday morning, watched it again. So I'm a glutton for punishment.
I don't even know if it's actually over yet, Max. I'll tell you, it just keeps running through my mind. You know, Max, I'm going to say something, and it may be a little controversial or what have you, but, you know, frankly, I mean, I thought the officiating was less than good in that game. I think the SEC office needs to take a hard look at that crew and review and those type things. I mean, the one thing that I see across the SEC landscape this year is that, and I'm not saying we have bad officials or what have you, but there's no consistency from game to game. I remember the days you could turn on an SEC game and it was going to be officiated, you know, about the same way. But, you know, the football officials in the SEC now, the crews have gotten almost like basketball officials. You got to fill them out and see how they're going to call the game. And but there would just, I mean, again, not to be an old coach and harp on the officials and blame the officials. But, you know, again, I just thought the officiating in that game was, if the officiating had been up to the par of the players' effort and contribution, it would have been a much better game, I'll just say that.
I know when I came along, immediately after I got out, I retained some friendships with those guys, Steve Shaw being one. This is back when he was still on the field. Butch Lambert, a good friend of mine. And I remember going to breakfasts with these guys on game days when they were still already dressed in their striped shirts ready to hit the field. Mm-hmm. And this was a common theme. If we're good enough, the game goes along and we leave the field and nobody knows we were ever there. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's the good officiating that comes out of it. And I do think that there's been some inconsistencies and the controversy that came out of the game in College Station this weekend. It's not the first. No. We had some with Mississippi State and Alabama. We've had others along the way. Right. Again, and be honest with you, but I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I've talked to those guys about the first thing I'm going to tell you is maintaining quality, mm-hmm. getting good guys to come through the system with high school, junior college, D2, and then move up to the Division One. Mm-hmm. Of course, they know if they're good enough. I mean, I can give you a few that were good enough there that went straight on to the NFL.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it is somewhat, and I do think that the instant replay is probably helped that. I don't know mm-hmm. that it's enforced better officiating, mm-hmm. but it certainly has given them an out mm-hmm. if there's a mistake made, and I applaud that, mm-hmm. even though sometimes I think that's missed as well. Right. But that's, you know, looking at it through my eyes, you know, as a former coach. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I saw that. I certainly can reconcile the fact is that particularly LSU thought maybe they got the short end sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, if number 84 is 6'6", a wide receiver – from Texas A&M, I'd be doubling him.
Oh,
everywhere he went, because he caught two touchdowns and two extra points that cost him a ball game.
He sure did. And full disclosure, before we move on, I'm not a dog of the dogging the officials or what have you. And like I said, full disclosure, you know. And you mentioned Steve, who's now moved off the field. Steve Shaw, right. The director of SEC officiating. Hey, you know, he happens to be my first cousin. So again, you know, I'm going to keep the holidays light around the house or what have you. But I do, you know, like I said, I just think there's some avenues where they can improve. I know that they're trying to get sure. it right. I know nobody, no player, no coach, no official goes out with the intentions of trying yeah. to not get the call right. But going back to the game, which is really where the action was, so to speak. And one thing that I've got to give the A&M team credit for. I've seen this team evolve over the course of the year. There's so yep. much more fight in this team. I'm not talking about the post game with Jimbo's nephew, but there's just so more fight and grit with this team than they've had in previous years. They will fight back, where in years past, when things kind of they were front runners. Things were going good. We're going to play good. Things start going bad, and they fall by the wayside.
You know, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I recall I made the statement on our show over here, Boji, that watching their spring game, Jimbo came on immediately. Remember, that was the only spring game in the league this year that went full speed contact on kickoffs, punt returns, and the quarterback did not have a colored jersey on.
Right.
I mean, they allowed full contact for everybody. And he said afterwards it was the softest, most unorganized group that he'd ever been around. Well, that's changed. I'm going to tell you, that's changed big time. And hats off to him for doing it.
Yep, I totally agreement with you there. I know they haven't quite got some of the production that they would like to have, especially offensively, haven't come along. Kellen Mond is he's had some bright spots, but he's also had some big blunders. I mean, go back to the Auburn game. You take away that ill-advised throw that he made,
right,
that Auburn intercepted and got them back in the game and really propelled them back to winning. You take away that throw, and you're talking about a team that's sitting at 9-3 right now.
Yep. Well, you go back and look at it, and I think from where they came from, they were almost on a run at that particular time. Mm-hmm. And you've seen this happen before, that overconfidence level. Hey, I'll just throw it in that, in that small window,
right,
and my guy will catch it.
Right.
Well, that didn't happen, and certainly I think probably because it's the first year, you made the comment about the transposition that's in the transition that's being made, mm-hmm, from where they were to where they are now. I think that was very tedious. Yeah. And if I had to guess, they went back home and they probably had some very healthy practices.
Yeah.
I'd say the next week.
Yeah. Offensively, they're averaging just a tad over 26 points a game. Back in the day when you and I were coaching, 26 points a game, you said your offense is going to give you 26. You felt pretty good about it. But,
right,
these days your offense better give you 26 a half if you want to have a chance to win. So, there's some things there that they have to work on from offensively. I think there's something like, in the high 30s as far as ranking in total offense, and it's just I think Elko has done a decent job with the defense, 28th, but they're giving up 34 points a game, and I know that's something that concerns Jimbo.
Well, yeah, now 26 a game will get you beat.
Yeah,
and that's going to tell you that your defense is going to stay on the field a long time.
That's right.
With the modern football that we're seeing today. Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll move on from that. I just read off the 74-72, seven overtimes, 146 points, 4 hours and 53 mm-hmm. minutes.
Yeah,
that's a lot of record setting that ball game. And and again for Texas A&M, I was proud for them. And the fact is, I think it set them, basically on a new path that Jimbo came there to do. So hats off to him, and we'll get a chance to see. I think they're on track right now, the number one recruiting class in the country. If it's going to be in the West, it'll be Alabama, LSU, and Texas A&M for next year. That ought to make a pretty exciting league.
I think so. Max, I don't know that if you've talked about this or not today, but some breaking news coming out of Chapel Hill. Looks like Mac Brown is returning to North Carolina for his second tenure there. I don't know if you've talked about that or not today.
We had, and certainly the rumor we're hearing going with it is Cliff Kingsbury is the offensive coordinator and Gene Chizik coaching defense. So mm-hmm. we'll see how all that. The next thing I'll say with Coach Brown and with Gene is the assisted living home is just down the road from the stadium.
That's
so
true.
We'll get a chance to see how all that works out. And I was going to ask you about that also. Of course, Larry Fedora gone now.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you what I'm hearing this morning from somebody very close to the program is that Chip Lindsey's already turned in his resignation at Auburn. So I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. So what does that do? Does that give Gus another opportunity to get back on the field?
I think it does. I would not be surprised to actually see Rhett Lashley make a return to the Plains. I would not be surprised to see that. real quick back to the North Carolina theme, Mac, as far as some scoop that I've heard, is that Gene Chizik going as defensive coordinator, and then in a couple of seasons, Mac Brown's only a few wins away from being the all-time wins leader at North Carolina. He wants to be an athletic director, and when Bubba Cunningham decides to step down, supposedly the hierarchy is going to move Mac Brown into the AD's position, going to move Gene Chizik into the head coach. Gene will get another chance to be a head coach at a Power 5 school. But back to your point at Auburn, what's going on there? I think, and again, this is nothing that he has told me personally. This is just personal observation. You know, I think that Chip is getting frustrated. You know, it's more as a coach, you know this, Max, it's hard to – you don't mind taking blame and responsibility for what you have responsibility and say-so for, but it's really hard to take responsibility for something that you're not making the final decision in, the total final decision. And I think that has a lot to do with Chip leaving the program. It's just, Gus really needs to decide whether Gus wants to be a head coach or Gus wants to be the offensive coordinator. You can't, you know, if you're going to be both, go ahead and state it. But as we both know, there was directed coming from the top that he needed to hire an offensive coordinator, let the offensive coordinator coordinate the offense. The longer that Chip has been there, in my opinion, the less and less that has happened.
I don't think there's any doubt. My observation was that every time the camera was on Gus going up and down the field, he reached in that back pocket and pulled out that folded sheet of paper. That's when he started calling plays again.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know why that just jumps out at me, because normally he tries to maintain some composure. Now, remember this, first time ever with his personality, he's got two personal fouls this year, one this past weekend for activities on the sideline. Well, I guess he's speaking very harshly to the officials is what it sounds like to me. I didn't know that was in his personality, to tell you the truth.
No, I didn't either. And I will say the first one that he got a few weeks back, I thought that was more drama than anything else.
I think so, too.
I'm going to tell you, the one yesterday or the one Saturday, though, in Tuscaloosa, you know, had I been the head coach, they'd have probably been escorting me out of there, because he said bull crap. I hate to say, I'd probably said a few more words in there between bull and crap. But that is not in his personality. And listen, don't think that he's not feeling the heat. $49 million, basically $7 million a year, and you don't pay somebody $7 million a year to go 7-5 and take you to the Birmingham Bowl or the Magic City Bowl or some lower tier bowl. You just don't do it.
Yeah, I don't think he's did that. All right, let's jump over quickly. I'm going to hit just a couple other games. I thought Tennessee had turned the corner when they beat Kentucky. I thought everything, then I thought they kind of pulled back. I don't know, I'm not taking anything away from Vanderbilt this weekend, but I thought Vanderbilt stepped up, and certainly Tennessee didn't step up and meet the challenge for them.
No, and I think, like with a lot of programs, and you and I have been around these type programs before, you work and you work and you work, and then you get a little bit of success, and you think, wow, we can take the – and not coaches, obviously, but players. Wow, man, we're here. We've arrived. Man, look how good we played. We can take our foot off the gas now. And they felt that way when they – played and beat Auburn, and then and obviously it backfired in their face, and then it turned around and they did the same thing when they beat Kentucky. Again, taking nothing away from that Vanderbilt team, I got to give Derek Mason a lot of credit. They had their backs up against the wall, basically just had to to win out to get a chance to get to a bowl game, and they did it, and Vanderbilt's not the most talented team in the Southeastern Conference, and I just give them I give those guys a ton of credit. But go back to what Jeremy Pruitt said at halftime of the Alabama game. It's going to take us a couple of recruiting years to catch up with Alabama. And so he knows he's got work in front of him. I think it's harder, going to be harder than he actually thought it was going to be, and he knew it was going to be hard. I don't think any of us realized just how low Tennessee was during Butch Jones last year.
I know one thing, that'd have been my bunch. They'd have been in the weight room this morning, and that weight conditioning coach had them throwing up for you know, before breakfast.
That's it.
And to me, that was the only way. When we came along, that was the only way we got their attention.
Right.
You know that. I mean, it was just had to push them and push them and push them to do that. But, hey, times have changed, and sometimes you can't be as, you know, probably tough on them as some people have done in the past. All right, quickly, we've got a few minutes left here. Let's talk about the polls coming out tomorrow night. You're going to have Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Georgia. Of course, one of those, in my opinion, if Oklahoma wins over Texas in the Pac-12, in the Big 12, then I think probably Oklahoma moves into that. And whoever if Georgia loses, they drop out for sure.
Right.
Otherwise, I think Alabama may move down if they should get beat by Georgia. But I think they stay. And then, of course, I don't think anybody knows what Ohio State. I don't know whether you had a chance to watch that in the Michigan game or not, but Ohio State played better than any time I've seen them all year long. And I don't care about Urban's suspension to begin with, his health problems, their poor performance this past week, getting beat by Purdue, all of that stuff. Rolled into one, they look like a national championship contender the way they played against Michigan.
Max, I thought that Ohio State played their most complete game since going all the way back to the Sugar Bowl when they beat Alabama in the semifinals. I thought that was that Michigan game was the most complete that they played since then. They dominated Michigan. I think Michigan maybe came in there a little too confident on the revenge tour, and all of a sudden they saw what was happening, and I think they may have tightened up a little bit. Of course, Don Brown is a great defensive coordinator, but it's high risk, high reward, and Ohio State found a way to exploit that. Going back to the rankings, as you said, I think you've got to look at Oklahoma and Ohio State again, assuming Alabama beats Georgia, battling for that fourth spot. If Oklahoma beats Texas, they've avenged their only loss. Oklahoma, in my opinion, has the most consistent and best offense in the nation. They have the very worst defense, in my opinion, in the nation. But I think this Oklahoma team, I honestly believe that this Oklahoma team could beat Alabama, much like the go back to the old Rick Pitino Providence College basketball days, where we're not big enough and physical enough to play defense against you. But I'm going to tell you what, we'll come down here and we'll take a ton of shots, and we're going to score points. Hopefully we've got the last possession and it's tied, or we're down one and we score and the game's over with. You know, I really think that has to be Oklahoma's mentality if they go against an Alabama, because obviously Alabama's offense is good, and they would, I think Alabama would score 100 against that Oklahoma defense. The problem is that Oklahoma offense may score 101.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's any doubt about Kyle Murray. He's an outstanding talent, and somebody's outstanding. Not only is he outstanding on the football field, but he turned down like $8 million to go play pro baseball.
Right.
So, that'll be interesting just to say. Right, one last statement. Debo Sweeney steps up in an interview last night, I think it was aired this morning, about some of the fans not being happy with the scores, and he's not winning by big. You know, this goes with long-term success. I'm sure Alabama has done the same thing, and there have been other schools around that there are just controversy and critics out there because they aren't happy with what you've done.
Yep.
And Debo pretty clearly said, well, if the fans aren't really happy here, I may be looking somewhere else.
Yep.
Well, the first thing that I read into that was that Coach Saban's not going anywhere right now for the next 2 or 3 years. However, if Urban Meyer does step down at Ohio State, you don't think Ohio State wouldn't go after Dabo Sweeney in a heartbeat?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And if Dabo really wants to be appreciated, head on out to Lubbock, Texas. That job is open right now. But, Max, real quick, something like this goes back to a story that Coach Stallings told at the coaching convention many years ago. He said when he got to Alabama, he said, after that first year, they were 7-5, lost to Louisville in the Fiesta Bowl. He goes in and meets with the board, and they were like, Gene, first year, we're going to give you a chance. We believe in you and this, that, and the other. He said next year he goes back in there, I think 10-2, something like that, and he's thinking, well, they got to be pleased now. We're 10-2, we're ranked in the top 10. They said, well, you didn't win them all. He walks out of there, he's shaking his head, said, what am I going to do with these people? Well, the next year they go 12-0, win the national championship. And he said, well, I can't wait to get back in there now because we won them all, won the national championship. What are they going to say to me? He said, I walked in there, had my chest all bowed out and said, all right, fellas, what do you think now? He said, well, you didn't win them all by enough.
That's right. That's the mindset. You've mm-hmm. been through some of that through the years. Mm-hmm. And the win, and I love Dabo, I thought, said it clear. He said, look, a win's a win. Mm-hmm. And I think the Ohio States and the Ohio States and Oklahoma's have tagged just that philosophy.
Right.
You know, they barely beat Maryland. Ohio State did. Oklahoma, you know, had a couple, 58, 56 wins.
Mm-hmm.
So, you go out there and take a look. When it's all said and done and the dust settles, mm-hmm. I think let's just say Georgia beats Alabama. Does Georgia just move up and Alabama move to number four? Or do they seriously think about moving one of these other two teams in there?
Max, you know, that's the $64 million question. Alabama opened at like a 12-point favorite. Mike Bernard told us that on our show this morning on GameDaySportsRadio.com. Alabama opens as a 12-point favorite. Personally, and again, I have no rhyme or reason for this. I think if it's a narrow win by Georgia, a touchdown or less, I think Alabama may, still stay in at number four. I think if Georgia beats them by, 10 points, 11 points, 12 points, if Alabama stays a 12-point favorite, that's a 24-point swing right there.
Yeah.
And I know the committee says they don't look at what Vegas says, but they look at the power indexes. They admit that they use the power indexes, and those power indexes, part of their formulation is the point spread. So, indirectly, they do look at those numbers. And so I think that if it's Georgia, a touchdown or less, Alabama probably just bumps down to number four to the ire of the rest of the nation. If Georgia wins by, say, 8, 9, 10 or more, I think, and let me stipulate this, Oklahoma and Ohio State win impressively, I think Alabama drops out and you've got those two teams jockeying for position. My personal opinion, I think Ohio State has the best chance of winning impressively. I think that Oklahoma, I think they will beat Texas, but I think it'll be another Big 12 matchup, 52 to 51, that type thing. And so it's not really going to be enough to impress the committee as an overall team, I don't think. Now, if Oklahoma can pull a defensive gem out of the hat and hold Texas to less than 10 points and they can score 40 or 50, man, I think that's going to be hard to keep Oklahoma out of the race. Even if Georgia beats Alabama, in my opinion, they would have to go in over Alabama if they convincingly beat Texas, avenge their only loss of the year.
All right, last question. Can Georgia beat Alabama?
Max, I think they can. I think, and the reason being because I think they're well-rounded offensively. They've got enough firepower in the backfield. A lot of teams that have played Alabama, they have what I call a one-bullet backfield, and they've got one guy that they're going to have to run up in there over and over again, and they just can't get it done. Georgia has a plethora of backs that they can throw out there, and even down the linebacks just to get a little bit of relief. But of course, DeAndre Swift and Isaiah Holyfield, your two main backs, I think that they have enough ump up inside and enough speed on the outside to pose a threat. And Jake Fromm, again, he's continued to improve every day since he's been on that campus. And I'll tell you this, I don't know, again, I don't have a prediction on the team. It's hard to, it's really hard to gauge this Alabama team because they've just dominated everybody so much. So it's kind of hard to gauge them. But I can tell you this, coming out of Athens, they aren't afraid. They're excited to be playing Alabama on Saturday.
All right, I'm going to give you just two other statements there. First of all, Georgia's last in the league in sacking the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't get to Tua, they can't win. That's my opinion right there. And second is, how about the offensive front? They had, they've had three or four returning starters, but they've lost, I believe, one tackle already this year.
Mm-hmm.
And can Alabama's defense get to Fromm?
Mm-hmm.
And I know they won't try it before. They'll try it before early on, mm-hmm. but they are subject to bringing one backer or nickel or whomever mm-hmm. from the outside and mixing it up. those are the things I look at, Bojie, to see. And I do think the maturity of Alabama's staff, they lost that. Georgia lost that ball game last year on a coaching error. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that now with the defensive back when Reed took a bite on the out pattern. But that came from the head coach, by the way.
Yep.
So, you know, you go back and look at where they are. I still think Georgia might still be still another year away because of the youth, mm-hmm. and they had to replace seven starters on the defensive side.
They did have to play for starters, and you know, and of course, you know, only you and I would go back and look at video like this. But you know, in my opinion, Georgia in second 26, you never. Why would you be in cover two anyway?
Exactly
you know,
right.
you know, if you're going to show a cover two look, play two sync where you're
do something.
Yeah,
exactly right.
Where your corners
but is
are.
Is that not a coaching error?
Yeah, that ain't no doubt. It's a coaching error. No
right.
doubt. No doubt in the world.
Those
is.
Kids don't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And but no, your point is great. And. And listen, I even think that Alabama is going to you know how Nick Saban is and Kirby Smart, you know, he was spat from Nick Saban's
yep.
mouth from a coaching standpoint. But we're going to see something from both defenses that we haven't seen all year. There's no doubt about it. I'm actually looking for Alabama to come out and run a lot of three-man front early on to see if
yep.
they can two-gap and with those defensive linemen to give the linebackers a little bit more freedom and stopping the run, and but also being able to play deep enough to go ahead and get a jump on the pass. Because I really feel like that Alabama, if they feel like that they can keep Georgia in a third and four or more yards in those situations, if they can do that with a three-man front, I think they're going to feel good about that because all that does is it takes away any deep threat that Alabama would have – or, excuse me, that Georgia would have throwing the ball deep on Alabama. And Alabama, I think, has got the talent up front to do that. Georgia does not have the talent up front defensively to do that.
Bojie, always the reason why I love to have you on, particularly in the last period of the day, because we can rip it up and tear it down. The good thing is, all we get a chance to do is watch it now.
That's exactly right. I look forward to being with you next Monday, Max.
We'll do it, Bojie. Thank you so much for your time today. Bojie Wood, guys, I'm going to tell you, ESPN Mississippi.